and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, right here to The Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. It's been a very good weekend so far, and I hope everybody is doing very well. But glad you are here listening tonight. And I want to thank those listening from around the world, because we get lots of listeners from everywhere. And if you are listening from somewhere else around the world, but you'd like to come over and join all these people here in the chat room, feel free to come over to para-x.com, click on the live chat button, and you'll be in with all these wonderful people. And you can ask questions of our guests. And tonight, we have with us Kat Cloco.
Greetings from sunny Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah, rub it in. And we have Barbara Duncan.
And greetings from somewhat rainy Berkeley.
You still raining out there?
Yeah.
Wow. You guys had more rain in the last month and a half than you have in 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And that's causing lots of problems.
Yes. Yeah. And we got Jeffrey Gould with us.
Hello, hello.
Okay. And want to remind you, if you do have questions, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, co-host Cat. Jeff is not
chatting. I'm working on it. So I've got a tenuous connection.
You can get to me, Henry Foister, and we will get those questions answered for you. Or if you are somewhere else and you have a question and you don't want to come over to the chat room, you can still ask a question by sending it to theparanormalview@gmail.com. And Kat is in charge of watching over that. And we have other places also, right, Kat?
Yes, you can tweet questions over to us at ParaView Radio, and you can also send messages to our Paranormal View webpage, which is just facebook.com/theparanormalview. All one phrase.
All right. Now, we got a great guest that's going to be on tonight to talk with us for a while. Unfortunately, he can only be with us for an hour, so we aren't going to wait around. We'll do all our talking in the second hour after he has to leave. So we're going to let Kat introduce our guest.
Yes. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah.
So Tim Maley walks a strange and spooky world. He is the founder of the Fox Cities Paranormal Team, the author of 2 books, All Roads Lead to the Paranormal, which was published in 2013, and The Endless Road, which was published last year in 2016, which both take you through Tim's journey into the paranormal. He is a popular lecturer at the paranormal conferences and gives all his proceeds from special signed photographs to local humane societies around his speaking engagements. The special photos are signed not only by Tim, but also his para-pup pal, Murray. So welcome back to the show, Tim.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'm excited to be on the show again.
Yes. So we last had you on the show back on September 12th, 2015. So for all our listeners who want to hear all about his first book, All Roads Lead to the Paranormal, you can go into our archives, which are located at jeffgould.net/2011pnv.htm, which you can find on our website as well, to listen to that entire show. And since then, you have written The Endless Road, which continues the story from your first book.
It does. And it's for people that are worried that if they get the second book, they won't understand what I'm talking about. Everything in the first book that is important to my journey and my story is repeated in the second book. It was basically a second edition I've been so very fortunate here in the last 3 or so years. Some amazing things have happened, some amazing opportunities, and the story just got so much bigger, and I felt like I needed to update people. So that was the reason for the second book. And Potagrass for Pooches, which is the charity that I run, was the biggest reason for writing the second book, because so many things have happened with that. And in the first book, I barely touch on it because I had just formed the charity.
Right. And I see you all the time announcing new events with Potagrass for Pooches. So before we dive into that, for our new listeners, how did you get into the paranormal and running Fox City's paranormal team?
I always thought that I had a unique story, but I don't think I do. I bought a home in Wisconsin in 2006, and I was 31 years old at the time and never really experienced anything paranormal. And bought this home that I still live in to this day, and within a week I had footsteps and banging on the walls and all these scary things happening, quite honest. You know, for me, never having dealt with it, it terrified me to some extent. I tried calling or I tried emailing teams in my area and didn't get any response. And I guess looking back, it's kind of a blessing in disguise, because if I would had somebody in here, they may have explained the activity. And the next thing you know, I'm not where I am today. And I love what I do. I've been very, very fortunate. We're getting close to about 200 paranormal investigations in a little over 9 years, and most of those are residential investigations. And that's the reason I have to leave early tonight. I gotta run to another residential investigation. But it's become so much more than a hobby for me. And people say hobby once in a while, but it's become a large part of my life, the paranormal. And I look at it and I kind of pinch myself, and I feel like a very, very lucky man.
Yeah. And I'm glad.
I have to ask this, because with your Potagrass for Pooches campaign and your ghost hunting, do you approach residential hauntings where the people have pets, dogs or cats, any differently? And do you look at the effect it's having on the animals?
We've had a few cases that have involved the animals being affected. For the most part, I mean, even before I started the charity, I am a sucker for dogs. And if there was a dog in the home, my concentration was on that dog until I made a friend. And then we would go on about the investigation. Specifically dogs being affected, I can think of a few right now. Most recently, just this winter, we did a case where we caught a voice near the kennel where the dog was being kept, and it wasn't a very nice voice. And later that night, coincidence or not, the shock collar on this dog went off for no reason. Now, I don't condone shock collars, but I was not the owner of the dog, so I wasn't about to take the collar off. But yeah, the collar went off without any provocation, and the voice, combine that with the voice that we caught. Pets, dogs, cats, it feels the same to me as if a child was being affected. And I know that sounds a little odd for people that don't love animals. But a client says, hey, my child is being affected by this haunting. That gets my utmost attention, as well as, hey, my pet, my dog, my cat is being affected by this. To me, they're one and the same.
Yeah, I believe that too. Now, have you brought anybody, any spirit back with you that your pets have picked up on?
I have, and it's interesting because, people ask me if I take Murray on these investigations, and I absolutely do not. I don't want to put him in a situation that I choose for him. That's just my personal opinion. But there have been times when spirits have followed me home, and Murray will be the first one to let me know. You could just tell by the way he acts or reacts to me when I get home. And there's been a handful of times, as much as you want to protect yourself and say prayers. And, you know, I'm not saying don't do that, but, you know, as much time as we put into protection, there's just times when something will decide that they're curious about you. And the next thing you know, you have a friend.
So Murray's sort of looking at you like, yeah, who's the new guy?
Yeah, there was one time in particular, and this is quite a while ago, before my wife, I'd gotten home from an investigation, let him outside to go to the bathroom, went upstairs to go to bed, and he got this worried look on his face. He was looking behind me and backed all the way off the bed. Ooh. And it was at that moment that I kind of turned around and I said, you know, I understand that you may be interested or curious about me, but this is not your place to be. You need to go. And thankfully it worked. And we got a good night's sleep. But yeah, there's times, you know, and in my investigation style, I try to be personable. I try to speak to them on an emotional level if I can. And sometimes the connection is so good that, you know, they don't want me to leave. And that's happened. So it kind of comes with the territory. And for people that are looking to get into investigating, I think it's one of the things you need to understand before you do.
Yeah, it's one thing for a ghost to follow you home. It's another to say, you know, if I snuggle into bed with you there. And,
Yeah, I guess that is a little creepy. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I've never believed in provoking. I mean, spirits used to be alive, so you have to treat them with respect.
Exactly. And I think if you connect with them on an emotional level, on a personal level, what's the saying? You get more. I shouldn't even try it. I can't.
Flies with honey than vinegar.
Exactly. My grandmother used to say it, and I couldn't think of it at the time. But yeah, just treat people the way you would want to be treated, and not to get, you know, all up in the world news right now. But you know, I think that could go well for everybody, not just communicating with the dead.
Yeah, that's true. So have you been to an investigation of a house and found the spirits of any pets?
One time. you would think somebody like me and what I do, it would happen more often than that. But one time we were doing an investigation at home in Green Bay, and we were in the basement, and plain as day, for about 2 or 3 seconds, we saw a white dog walking across the basement.
Oh, wow.
And I think I'd only been doing investigations for about a year at the time, and I just froze. I didn't even know what to think. It hasn't happened since then. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be a time when it does. But yeah, it was definitely an experience, and kind of wish I could have a do-over on that one.
Yeah.
So was it more like a Samoyed or like Jon Snow's direwolf ghost?
If I had to make a guess, I would say a Samoyed. It was a large dog, all white, and it was almost a residual thing though, because it didn't seem like it knew we were there, and if it did, it didn't care.
Well, Samoyeds are pretty laid back, so.
Really? I haven't met a laid-back one.
Really? Well, nope. No, actually, we babysat one, and it was more of an attention, like, please pay attention to me, and I did have to sleep in the rec room with it so it wouldn't whine all night.
Yeah, usually they're a really good match energy-wise with my paranormal pup, Wheatley, who's very energetic and bounces everywhere, that the two of them will just bounce across the dog park. But anyway, so yeah, different personalities. It's interesting how one breed will have a plethora of different personalities. So but anyway, have you been to Saddamsville Rectory yet, Tim?
I have not, and that's one of those places that is on my paranormal bucket list. I want to get there. I think about a year or two ago I was scheduled to be at an event, and unfortunately the ticket sales weren't going well, so they canceled the event. So I didn't get my opportunity. But, yeah, someday, hopefully.
The only thing about that is it is definitely not in a good area.
No, it's not. But for people I would say all of us on the show tonight are very sympathetic to animals and their needs. It used to be one of Michael Vick's pit bull fight ring locations. The entire basement is just blood, iron red from all the fighting. And the reason why I bring it up, because we are talking about Tim's charity that raises money for the Humane Society, and so many dogs in humane societies right now are pit bulls or pit bull mixes. I saw an apparition of a pit bull walk through the second floor of Saddamsville Rectory. So it would be a very hard place to visit for anyone who's sympathetic to the cause.
And that's news to me. I had no idea that that was used for the fight ring, but and for people that are listening, and you know, we'll talk about potographs here in a bit, but Murray is actually half pit. And he is about the most laid back and gentle dog you're ever going to meet in your life. And really has no reason to be, because people treated him like, well, they treated him not well, his first 6 months, but, he loves people, loves everybody he comes in contact with. So, trying to break that myth of pit bulls being an awful breed.
Oh yeah, they're absolute sweethearts, and I refer to them as Staffordshire Terriers because I consider a pit bull to be sort of like the N word for dogs.
I don't know, but I love their smiles and just how they're happy. Their eyes just go into little crescent moons whenever they just smile, and it's adorable. My neighbor has a pit bull, and he's the most loving dog ever. I don't think I've actually ever met a bad pity.
Have you seen, there's a photo of one of them just standing there with this absolute smile, I'm in heaven look on his face, where he's surrounded by a group of cows that are just all nuzzling his head.
Oh, that's cute.
I'll have to put that on my Twitter feed for you to see.
Yeah.
Now, where are you located out of?
I'm up here in cold, snowy Wisconsin.
Is it snowing up there now?
No. It's about 30 degrees out right now. So, you know, we're getting close to the point where we can go out with short sleeves.
I got short sleeves.
Huh? Tomorrow is supposed to be almost 50 degrees and rain. So most of our snow should be gone. But then we just have a mud pit for about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Well, we've had some snow flurries the last two mornings here, so supposed to be nice and sunny tomorrow and warm up into the 50s, maybe low 60s, but we'll see whether that happens or not.
Right.
Now, your dog, Murray, you had a story about how you come to be with Murray. Why don't you tell us about that?
The story about how I came to be with Murray kind of bleeds into the reason for potographs, and forgive me if it takes a few minutes, but when I bought my house in 2006, I was going through some pretty severe depression at the time, and it was over a relationship. And you know, 2017 Tim would love to go back and tell 2006 Tim that it's going to be okay, but at the time I had convinced myself that life was pointless and it just wasn't a good time to be me. But I told myself when I bought the house that I wanted to get myself a dog. I'd always wanted a dog. And up until then, I'd lived in apartments and I didn't really have the chance to get a dog. So that was my number one thing when I moved in here. And I went online and I looked for yellow labs. That's what I wanted originally. And I found a yellow lab / pit bull. And the story got me. You know, they had gone into the home and rescued him. The person that had him had beat him severely. And here he was 6 months old and scared of everything. And when I called, they didn't even want me to come down because, you know, the person that had hurt him was a man. And he was not reacting well to men. I convinced them to let me come down and see him. And they let him out of the kennel and pointed him towards me. And this little puppy that wasn't supposed to want anything to do with me came running and jumped into my arms and started licking my face. Later that week, I brought him home, and instantly he was seeing what I was hearing, and it gave it validation, and I didn't feel crazy anymore. And I think it was about a month later. Yeah, I know it was early 2007 or 2007. Yeah. And I'm glad I don't remember the date because I think it would drive me crazy if I did. I had convinced myself that life was done. And it wasn't worth living. And I'd gone through friends and family, a whole list, and you know, made excuses as to why it's okay if I'm not here. And at that moment, I felt something on my arm, and I looked down, and Murray had put his head on my arm, and he was looking up at me with his beautiful brown eyes. And at that very moment, life was worth living again. And it snapped me out of it. And I realized that he needs me just as much as I need him. So from that moment forward, we were like father and son. We've never really been owner and dog. And it's just the most rewarding thing that I have ever done in my life. And my wife is perfectly fine when I say that because she knows without him, I wouldn't be here for her. Life would have been over as I know it. And I wouldn't get to do all this crazy and fun stuff that I get to do. And that was the reason for, you know, for creating Podgrass for Pooches. It was less about me, and if I'm being honest, less about raising money for humane societies when I first started this charity, and it was more about creating a legacy for Murray. I wanted people to remember him, and what he had done, and how special he was, and the support behind it was so incredible, and it just took off, you know. And I owe it all to him. You know, nobody wants a picture of me. You know, if I could sell pictures of me for a dime a piece, and I wouldn't sell any. But I put him on the photo, and the next thing you know, in 3 years we've raised $10,000, and we've split that amongst, you know, animal shelters around the country. Wherever I'm speaking, you know, there's a shelter in that area that gets all the money that we raised that weekend. So, just an amazing opportunity, and just. A dog that is more special than I think he will ever know.
Wow. And that reminds me of the Who Saved Who bumper stickers you'll see on some people's cars, because those who have adopted dogs and cats and other small animals will really, yeah, we treat them as our children, I would say. And they're integral to our just living.
I've always found that the loss of a pet seems to be far stronger of a mourning period than of a human being, even a family member. I mean, they're almost considered more of a family member than the human family members sometimes.
I went through that personally. About a year and a half ago, we lost our Sasha.
Yeah.
She was a black lab, and I have never cried that much in my life. And I lost my dad when I was 15. My dad passed away when I was 15. And the loss of Sasha crushed me. It absolutely crushed me, because there I was holding her when she lost her life. And the bond that you create, not to say I didn't have a bond with my father. I absolutely would give everything up to have him back. But it's just different. And it took a long time. And if I'm being honest, I'm still really not over it. Sometimes I see a picture of a black lab and I'll just burst into tears. And people look at me like I'm strange. But it's tough.
Oh, I agree.
Barbara, you got something?
Oh, I'm just sitting here still thinking back about that poor dog with the shock collar. And if I were there, I probably would have ripped it right off.
Yeah.
It also does depend on the dog. My mother had a dog that they adopted from the shelter, but the shelter had essentially broken it. So you know how some dogs socially can't really be redeemed? And she didn't have a shock collar per se. They tried putting up one of those invisible fences because she was a runner, and she was also really smart. So she learned that if she ran really fast, the shock collar would just go bink and be done, and then she'd be off roaming the neighborhood. But then she was too dumb to decide to run back to get into the yard. She'd like zap, oh, I guess I'll just be wandering out here then.
I should add, before we go to any further, I did talk to the family about the shock collar and what had happened, and since then they have decided not to use it anymore. So there is a happy ending there.
Yay. Oh, that's a relief.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one thing for a human to say, okay, I can live in a haunted house. You know, I go to work, you know, I leave the house every now and then. We can't always say that about our pets. Our pets are kind of trapped there. And we don't know what these spirits might be doing or tormenting them when we're not around. And I don't think people understand that. I can live in a haunted house fine. I don't know if I'd subject my cat to that.
Actually, I lived in a haunted house. Neither my dog or the cats we've had ever raised a rooster about it.
Mm-hmm. My rabbits used to. So, Tim, my previous house was haunted by a ghost cat, and it liked to pester my rabbits.
I'm going to get in trouble here when we start talking about cats. people always ask me, you know, why is this Pottergraphs all geared towards dogs? And the reason is Murray. I mean, it. Mm-hmm. I do have a cat, and he's not really well known. but we have a cat, and mostly I got him for Murray. And people say, oh, my God, you got a cat for your dog. And that's not the reason. I was working a lot of hours, and I felt guilty about leaving him home by himself. So I went and got him a kitten. And they basically grew up together. So my cat believes he's a dog. And to me, that's the best kind of cat to have. I don't dislike cats. It's just some people come up to me at events and they're like, sometimes my cat will just look into the corner and I don't know what it's looking at. And I've gotten in trouble with those people because I look at them and I'll be like, you know, sometimes cats are just dumb. And they give me a dirty look and walk away. But I don't mean it seriously. I mean it in fun. But, you know, sometimes cats just do things that make you scratch your head.
I have to agree with that.
And sometimes they do things just to psych you out.
Yeah.
And believe you me, they are smart.
When they want to be.
We've got a male cat that just, I mean, he can be so nice, but then there's times he'll just antagonize you to pieces. I mean, and he does it on purpose. He knows what he's doing. Sometimes want to just,
Probably when you're not home, they've already set up a Twitter account and a Facebook page. So you got to watch out for cats.
No, I had a cat growing up that was a lot like a dog. She would wait for me to come back from school every day. But she was also kind of dopey. And she loved to fall asleep on the cable boxes, if you remember back in the days when we had cable boxes. And she got a little hefty in her older age, and one day she accidentally fell off while sleeping and took the cable box with her. But anyway.
Sounds like one of those America's Funniest Home Videos that had this giant cat on top of a TV, and it would just sort of shiver in its sleep and fall off. And when they won the money, and they said, "What? How did you happen to catch the dog, cat doing that?" He says, "That's how he sleeps. He does that all the time. He just wakes up when before he hits the floor, and climbs back up and goes back to sleep till he shivers and falls."
Oh,
Tim, I'm curious. How do you set up the Pottergraphs for pooches when you go to someplace to give a speech, for example? Do you actively look up the local Humane Society, or have they been contacting you because they know now about what you're doing?
Not many of them know what I do, and unfortunately, there's some Humane Societies or animal shelters around the country that flat out refuse to have anything to do with me because it is raised at a paranormal event, and they can't get past that. For the most part, exactly. It makes me scratch my head, too. But for the most part, I rely on the promoter of the event. If it's a paranormal conference, I get in touch with them and ask if they can find a no-kill animal shelter that in the area that we can donate the money to. And if it's a Pottergraphs exclusive event, which we've done a few of those, I will actively search. Or if I have a friend in the area, I will call in a favor and have them search one out for me. So there's shelters that we've worked with multiple times. When you go back to an area, my favorite shelter to work with is Northern Michigan Animal Rescue Network. They're amazing people there. They do great work, and they get very, very excited about the money we donate, and that's the way it should be, but sometimes people can't get past their personal feelings about the paranormal, and I'm not here to change anybody's mind, but it's disappointing.
Wow. Well, now, we're going to go ahead, and because you're only going to be here for another half hour, we're going to go ahead and take our break. It won't be a real long one. That way we can get back and talk with you some more before you have to go. And because things worked out, Jeff is going to be taking us out on the first break and on the second break.
Oh, yeah.
I will be bringing us back, so that way I won't have to tell people when to when to come back. So
you know, we can hear the stuff now.
Yeah, I know you can, but I mean, I still won't have to send it to you. Why don't you go ahead and take us out, and we will I'll bring us back.
Yep. You're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foyster, Cat Cloco, Ceiling Cat, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's returning guest, paranormal investigator and author Tim Miley. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
So, Tim, around here at Para-X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, 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 little sis. No, 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 not the Who, the Shock.
Hi, I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Rat, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rat, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rat, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Line!
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foyster, Jeffrey Gould, Cat Cloco, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They all talk gobbledygooky, the Para-X family.
shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Parrax family.
They're strange, deranged, unrestrained.
So grab your favorite brew, it's time to rendezvous, as we give awards to the Parrax family.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, all those in the chat room and all those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. And speaking from around the world, Barbara, where do we have listeners at?
Henry, tonight they're coming from all over the United States, from Germany, from England, from Singapore, from Ireland, from unknown, a couple of unknowns. A
couple of unknowns. Mm-hmm. I tell you, they're building that base on the dark side of the moon. I know.
Yeah, maybe. So during the break, Tim, we got a question from the chat room. And it is from our friend, Ariana. And she writes, what is the biggest unexpected obstacle Tim or you have encountered in the charity?
The one I spoke about right before the break, I didn't anticipate that shelters would turn down the money or ignore me. Mm-hmm. That one shocked me, to be quite honest. I guess it's the only thing that has gone wrong. And I say that not to sound arrogant, but we've been really lucky and people have really gotten behind this. And, I couldn't have done any of this without the support from everybody, you know, not only in the paranormal community, but people that come to the events, the paranormal community. I mean, I've had, you know, people like John Tenney have done these events for free for me. The list goes on. And of course I can't think of them right now. Scott Tepperman, mm-hmm. from Ghost Hunters International, a very good friend of mine, is doing two of the events this year. And none of them ask for anything. They want to help. It's a hiccup in the road, you know, when you run into shelters that don't want to be a part of it because of the paranormal. But when that happens, we find a shelter that gladly accepts the money. So it all ends up working out.
Well, now you do investigations for this and then donate all the money to a shelter. Do you have any on tap right now that's going to be coming up?
We do. And you can go and check those out at pawdegrassforpooches.weebly.com. We have one April 1st in Tampa, Florida. You know, who would have thought a pasty white guy from Wisconsin would be able to hold a charity event in Tampa, Florida. But we're going down there to be myself, Scott Tepperman, April and Selena Brown, and Chris Gotskowski, and my good friend Gary Fisher is going to MC the entire thing. The lectures are at a spiritual house, and the investigation that night is at the historic Tampa Theater. So fantastic opportunity for people to come out if they're in Florida. It's $30 for the lectures or $60 for the lectures and investigation. And really looking forward to that. We're working with the Humane Society of Tampa Bay on that one. April 29th, we have an event in Petoskey, Michigan, called Pawdegrass at the Terrace, at the Terrace Inn in Petoskey, Michigan. And myself, Scott Tepperman once again, Tim Woolworth and John Cassidy getting together. And we're going to do a dinner is thrown in for that one. So the price is $50. For the lectures and dinner, or $80 for everything plus the investigation. So we're hoping that those investigations and those events are successful. I'm looking here and I see Joe Chin's name. Joe Chin was at an event at Little Traverse Bay Parafest in Petoskey, Michigan last October, and then also the year before. And all the money that they got for being a part of the investigation at the paranormal conference, they donated to Pawdegrass for Pooches. So yes, thank you for reminding me. Joe Chin has been wonderful in helping the animals, and he deserves credit for that too.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Yep. Now, one, we have to ask this question. Does Marie attend these autograph sessions as well?
If it's in the area, we do an event every year in Oshkosh, where I live, for the Humane Society here, and he attends that one. Last year, we took him to Petoskey with us, and he was there, and unfortunately, during the event, he had a seizure.
Oh.
And we made the decision that we weren't going to do that anymore. He doesn't. He'll be 11 in April.
Wow.
And you know, he's my boy. He always will be. And his health comes first. So unfortunately, he won't be going to those events anymore. But it was so special last year because we raised over $1,500 that day. And at the end of the day, we all got to sing Happy Birthday to Murray because it was his 10th birthday. And to see a room full of people sing Happy Birthday to my little boy, I was a mess. And I will always remember that. And it was at that moment that I realized that his legacy is set. You know, people are going to remember him forever. And that's about the most special thing that's happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, $1,500 for an animal shelter is quite a lot of money. They can do a lot with that.
And they did. They actually rescued a 6-year-old chocolate lab that had been on a chain its entire life. They rescued that dog, gave it all of the veterinary care that it needed with the money that we raised. And they cut off a cancerous portion of the dog's tail. Mm-hmm. And all of that money that we raised went to that. And just recently, they were able to adopt Coco Bear, which is the dog's name. Out, and she's got a wonderful home now, and it's because of Pawtographs and the people that supported that event that she's alive and she has a happy life.
Wow.
Wow.
That's great.
I love hearing that.
Now speaking of donating like that, for listeners who may not be able to go to your events, but they might want to donate to that, how would they get in contact with you to be able to donate?
The easiest way to get in contact with me is simply on Facebook. It's Tim Miley, M-A-I-L-E. Just send me a friend request. Give me a heads up because I get a lot of friend requests from people that have like 2 or 3 mutual friends, and it always raises a red flag for me, and I'm cautious about it. But let me know that you want to help, and I'll gladly accept the friend request, and we'll see how you can help. Otherwise, send me an email. It's fcpt.wi@gmail.com. And that stands for Fox City's Paranormal Team, period, Wisconsin.
You have a website for Fox City's also.
We have a website for Fox City's Paranormal Team, and it's just simply foxcitiesparanormalteam.com.
There you go. And they can find that also.
Yep.
Now, I met you, in 2015 when you were down here at Post Town and did an interview, and we played that over the air before we actually had you come on the show. Are you coming back down to Post Town anytime soon?
I have not been, I shouldn't say I haven't been asked. The timing hasn't been right. Unfortunately, last September, I had to switch jobs because my job of 12 years, they closed the building.
Ah.
So I lost a lot of vacation, and all the vacation that I have now with the new job, I'm using on these exclusive Pawtographs events. So if it works with my schedule, I try to make it happen. Keith Age had asked me to go down to Mid-South this year. Simply couldn't do it. I didn't have the time off from work. So I'm going to miss that one too. But in a few years, I'll have the vacation built back up and I'll be able to attend more.
Well, I know they got another one toward the fall of the year. I won't say the fall, but it's in maybe August or September, way up north in tip of Michigan up there. Sault Ste. Marie.
Sault Ste.
Whatever it is, it's way up there.
You know, it's a big event. It's a Michigan Paragon, and unfortunately, they don't seem to have my number.
Oh, really?
I'm only about 3 hours away from them, but I have never been asked, and that's fine. It's not my event. I'm not gonna beg to be there. I think Michigan gets sick of me anyway, because I do two events in Petoskey each year, and then last year I was lucky enough to be at Old Mill Parafest in Dundee, Michigan. So three times a year I might be out wearing my welcome with the people of Michigan.
Yeah.
But they look like really fun events, because we know several people who went there, and it looked like a really fun group. So does Fox City's Paranormal, like, I know you're doing a residential investigation. How many residential investigations has your team been on this year and last year?
Basically every other weekend since the beginning of September.
Oh, wow.
It is. It has been the busiest 6 months that I have ever had as the leader of this team. And it's a double-edged sword because, of course, you don't wish this stuff on anybody.
No.
But, you know, if these things are happening to families, you know, it's an honor when, you know, when they get in touch with you or they contact another team and the team says, you know what, we can't handle this investigation, but I know who can. And they get a hold of me and it's humbling, you know, that we've gotten to a point where we're respected in the field and people think we do an okay job. So it's, you know, every case is different. Every case is unique. And I stopped counting at about 175 over 9 years. And I think we got to be close to about 200 after the last 6 months we've had. But you know, it's, I guess the best way I can put it is, it's just an honor. You know, I feel like I was meant to do this now.
Yeah.
And it's amazing for me. Every case means something. You know, the most benign thing in the world, you know, you have to take it seriously, because to that family, it's more than benign, you know, the things that are happening to them. So, like tonight, it's our third time back at this home.
To the same place.
Yeah, to the same place. And it's,
always feel that just once probably isn't really enough. I mean, a lot of times you can go to a place, not hardly get much at all. And maybe the second or third time you start really getting stuff.
Exactly.
So, you just have to be nice, take it slow and do it a couple times, three or four times, and then you'll start seeing what's going on.
You know, I get a lot of the credit here real quickly, but I get all the credit because my name is at the top and I'm the founder. But in the 9 years I've done this, I've been blessed to work with some amazing people on Fox City's Paranormal team, and they don't get enough credit. So, I can't name them all off because we got 10 and I'm going to forget somebody,
you got 10 members on your team.
I do. And the reason for that is, you know, we get a lot of residential cases, and we may get a case, a call on Tuesday saying, "Hey Tim, we need you here Saturday." And I need some flexibility, and hopefully four of those people can make it. So that's the reason why we carry a larger team, but they have such dedication. This means as much to them as it does to me. You know, I firmly believe that. And this is the best group of people that I've had in 9 years. They do a wonderful job.
So I know our listeners are going to be wondering this, because I am also wondering this. What is your most memorable investigation you've had with Fox City's Paranormal?
You can ask me this question 10 years from now, and it'll still be the same. We did a case... started in April of 2010 and didn't end up finishing working with that family until April of 2012.
Oh, wow.
It was a 2-year-old foster boy that had been murdered in the home. And we spent, like I said, 2 years trying to help this family and trying to help the spirits. And I had just recently in 2012 become friends with Scotty Rorick. Mm-hmm. And Scotty came in for our final investigation there, and, you know, he filled in the holes, you know, the things that we didn't know, the things that we couldn't figure out. Scotty was able to wrap it all up for us. And we were lucky enough to be able to move this little boy on. I don't know where. I just know it was a happier place than where he was. And it was all surreal. And later in 2013, it became an episode on Paranormal Witness.
Oh, wow.
And that episode's called The Innocent. The TV show took some liberties. So if you watch the show, it's not exactly how it happened. They got things, they got things out of order.
They do that for dramatic license. And
yeah.
Stuff.
But the reason we agreed to do the show wasn't because, hey, people need to know me. I just felt like Chris's story needed to be told. Chris is the 2-year-old boy, and I felt like he deserved that. And they did. They told his story correctly. They didn't sensationalize it. Everything else in the show they did, but they told his story, got his story out there, and a funny thing happened. Folks that didn't know who I was, all of a sudden being on that show legitimized me for some reason. And my social media blew up, and people all of a sudden wanted to talk to me. And I guess, in a way, all the success that Pottergraphs has had, I got to go back and give a thank you to Chris, too. I had that story not been on Sci-Fi. People, not that they really care who I am now, because I think it's kind of died down, but for a short moment in time, they cared who I was. And we used that little bit of notoriety to help launch Pottergraphs.
Well, next time you see Scotty, tell him I said hello. Scotty was on the first investigation that I ever was on. And he also got to go to a place that Cat Cloco has never got to go to. The infamous farmhouse.
Oh, yes.
Which is no longer there. It's been tore down. But he was there with us on that.
Yeah, he's told me all about that. And, Scotty and I have worked together now for 5 years.
Oh, well.
We don't bring him on every investigation just because, if we did, I don't think there'd be use so good at what he does. But
yeah, he's fantastic.
We go in and we gather as much, I guess, I don't want to use the word evidence, but I can't think of anything else. We go in and gather as much as we can. If we think it is something that warrants Scotty coming in, I'll get a hold of him, because I don't want to use him all the time and have him traveling all over the place. But yeah, he actually lives about an hour from me. So we get together when we can. And just as recently as November, we went together to a home and helped that family. So he comes with us on the second or third. Usually right now he's out in Boston partying it up. So he can't come with us tonight, but I'm sure at some point he and I will talk with the family that we're visiting with tonight.
Right. Very good. So sounds like, though, you're staying pretty busy with the Pottergraphs and with investigations.
I am. And it's I guess I'm not going to complain about it. It's a good thing. We get an opportunity to raise a lot of money for the animals. And then on the flip side, we get an opportunity to help a lot of families. So the two things that I'm the most passionate about, I get to do quite often. And in between there, when I do have some downtime, I love to spend time with my family, my wife, my daughter, and our two dogs, and our not so famous cat.
And our not so famous cat.
You should publicize the cat for people who are cat people. I mean, my brother had three cats. He adopted a Doberman Labrador mix who grew up thinking it was a cat.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because last year I was in an event with Scott Tepperman, and Scott said he was going to start his own charitable foundation just for cats and steal my idea. but a little known fact about Mr. Tepperman, he does not like cats. So his whole charity would be a fraud. But I
raise money for cats,
Yeah. I can't get through an interview without giving Scott a hard time, and I hope he hears this. Scott, I met Scott in 2010, and he's like a little brother to me, even though he's older. He's about a foot and a half shorter than me. But he's one of those friends that he's going to hate me for saying this, but every time he goes to the bathroom, he texts me. he'll send me a text message, and I'll be like, are you in the bathroom again? And he'll be like, yeah, I had some time on my hands. So
good thing. That's the only thing he had on his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. But he and I mean, we're close. And if he didn't live in Florida and I wasn't in Wisconsin, we'd be together all the time. He's an amazing guy. I give him a lot of grief. He's got a big heart, though. He really does. And he's very, very involved in Pottergraphs, mm-hmm. to the point where he actually coined the term. He named,
oh,
he named the charity. So Potographs for Pooches is because of Scott Tepperman.
And speaking of Scott, he and our friend Jim O'Rear this weekend, tonight, are at GnomeCon. And I think they're showing one of their movies that they shot together.
They are. They're doing Nightblade tonight, which I have a small part in.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm in there. So, yeah, go check it out. And, yeah, it's Los Bastards Productions. If you find Scott or Jim on Facebook, you can find that movie. Just keep in mind it's an independent film, so don't expect the quality of a Hollywood major motion picture. But it was a lot of fun filming that, and I'll be in their next one. I think Truth or Dare 5 is supposed to be coming out here real soon.
So you're going to be the Stan Lee to their production house.
The way he describes it is he's Adam Sandler, and Adam Sandler always gets his friends in his movies. So he told me, he goes, I'll write a spot for you in every movie if you can make it.
That's kind of true.
Yeah, we've met him down at matter of fact Mid South.
We've met both Jim and Scott.
Yep.
So and they're awesome guys. Well, they're fun to hang out with.
You guys got any other quick questions here for Tim? Because he's going to have to be running in just a few minutes.
Oh, no. Well, other than I hope next time you're on, there'll be a Photos for Felines event.
What is it? It's the cat?
Yep, Photos for Felines. Yep.
There you go. Well, I know where we can get a bunch of photos. Barbara's got some, and I've got some, and...
I've certainly Carla's
got some. Jeff's got some. So we can get a bunch of photos.
I could just put Bip under the umbrella of Potographs because cats do have paws.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although when they're into mischief, they don't pause. They just keep doing it.
Well, before you run, once again, why don't you give out all your contact info and what you're going to be doing real quick, like, and how they can follow you and get in touch with you and all the good stuff.
Find me on Facebook. It's just Tim Miley, M-A-I-L-E. Otherwise, you can go to foxcitiesparanormalteam.com or potographsforpooches.com or .weebly.com. Find The Endless Road on Amazon. Between now and Tuesday, every book that's sold, all the proceeds go to the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. So I don't get anything out of that. So go find that. It's selling for $9.99. It's not a bad deal. Other things I got going on, I have the Potographs exclusive events. You can find Potographs for Pooches on Facebook. I update that with event announcements. Plus, I'll share photos from Humane Societies, you know, looking for adopters. So I try to keep that active even when we're not doing events. Other than that, just say hi once in a while. I answer all messages. Sometimes I'm not very timely with it, but I do get back and answer them all.
Excellent. Well, I hope you have a great investigation tonight, and want to thank you again for taking the time to drop by and be with us. And just to let you know, it will be made into a podcast, a whole show will, and we'll let you know and everything when it gets posted up.
It'll be on YouTube as well, and we'll be sure to put all the links that you just noted along
Thank you guys so much. This is my second time on the show, and it's one of my favorite shows to do. So had a lot of fun, and it's always nice talking to all of you.
All right. Yes. Well, you have a great night.
Have fun.
Good night.
All right.
Good night.
Now, we're going to, we got a few minutes before we need to take a last break. So, is there anything you guys want to talk about for a couple of minutes? Anything special that's been coming up? I know Kat's been doing a lot of stuff out in Las Vegas.
Ah, yes. So I could very quickly talk about Las Vegas before we go to break. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it's been really fun being here. Right now, the sun has just set, and I'm staring at the Rio Hotel and Casino, which It's really brightly colored. I love all the neon signs. So what we've managed to do is walk up and down the strip and also visit, I just forgot what it's called. There's a big shopping arcade, and they have a lot of the vintage neon signs actually up on display for all to see. So they try to save as many as the old first generation casinos, which now many of them have been demolished. And new, larger casinos stand in their place. So I will say I did not know any ghost stories about Las Vegas when I came here. And Thursday afternoon, I met a few people and had ramen, actually, at Bally's Hotel and Casino. But in front of Bally's, there is a really large open-air mall, and they had a really good ramen shop called Katanaya in front of the casino. And I felt weird the entire time I was on that particular area. And I thought it was maybe because, no offense to her, but it was a gigantic Mariah Carey poster that seemed to watch you wherever you walked around this open-air mall, because she performs at Bally's. And I thought it was that was freaking me out. Well, it turns out, before the Bally was there, it used to be the old MGM Resort Casino, which apparently had a massive fire that killed hundreds of people. So there was a massive flash fire that took out, I think, the first floor, which was the gambling halls and everything. And some people were basically fried as they stood with the poker chips in their hands. And I don't have the information of how many people passed away, but that could be why I was feeling rather odd. Yes. Yeah. So the second thing I did on Friday was I went to the Mob Museum, which, as a true crime writer, though it has a paranormal bend to it, I wanted to go to this. It's actually the National there's a National Mob Museum of Organized Crime. It has a really long title, but it's just known as the Mob Museum, and it's in the old Las Vegas post office and courthouse. So it had dual purpose, the structure. So I got to go to and visit the original courthouse where a lot of the big Las Vegas mobsters were taken in for tax evasion and other not actual organized crimes cases. It was more for tax evasion and human trafficking. That's what a lot of them were actually jailed on. So I got to go and sit in the courtroom where they were all tried. And also, one of the things I never, ever thought I would ever see were the actual bricks of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Was that in that same building? Or?
It was. So I've been to, thanks to Ursula Bielski's Chicago Ghost Tours tour, I've been to the actual site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which happened on February 14th, 1929. And I think it was six men and later a dog were just assassinated. I'm sorry, I can't remember which mob did what, but basically one mob ordered
Bugsy Moran, I believe.
Yeah, Bugsy. Well, his group ordered a hit on his rival's group, and they actually showed up as police officers and plainclothes men, opened up their violin cases with Tommy guns and shot six men to death and traumatized a dog named Highball so badly that he had to be put down. And the current location is actually now the parking lot for a nursing home, opposite end of the spectrum, I guess. And it's when you go there, it's not really all that remarkable. You're just kind of like, yeah, this is where it happened. But you're looking at a nursing home and a parking lot. And I had heard that somebody had purchased, a rather wealthy man from Canada had purchased the entire wall of bricks and taken them up to a club, a nightclub in, I think, Toronto, Canada. It may have been Vancouver. But And that's where they were for years and years and years on display at this club. Well, eventually the club shut down. He, I guess, either sold it or just decided to stop running it. And the Mob Museum purchased the bricks. So they have the bricks as they were laid in 1929. And they show you, and it's actually a really good display if you're able to go, how they tell you the information of about the mob hit, who died, and then they open up this partition and you just see the wall with the bullet holes. And the thing is, next to them in the display case are the actual bullets, and they have the coroner's report for every man who was shot and which bullet hit him and where. It's fantastic.
Wow. And I saw the photo on your Cat Cloco Instagram account.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been putting up as many photos as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's been interesting. And I've been having a very good time here in Las Vegas. It's been interesting because we have family that actually lives here. And talking to the family of who are very much in favor of it, well, I won't say they want more in favor of anything, but you see a tug of war between people who favor the old Las Vegas versus the people who favor new Las Vegas. And there's quite a tug of war going on. And
so by old, you mean
the mob run.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So there was definitely, like, you're looking at Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack era versus, and that type of casino where everyone came to just gamble and see these live shows versus the new era, which is basically gone straight and has these huge resorts, and they're all family friendly, and there's a variety of different shows. You can see everything from children's shows to X-rated shows here on the strip, but there's much more to do besides gambling. So it's interesting seeing these two kind of generations headbutt against each other. And you still see it on the local, I watch the local news, and there'll be like older resorts that will say, come to XYZ resort where it's still old Las Vegas. And you'll see a woman sipping a martini with an olive in it. So it's interesting. I went through the Four Queens Casino earlier today, which is one of the first generation casinos, I think, built before 1970, though I'm sure I may be wrong, but it looked like something out of a James Bond film, because from floor to ceiling, it was gold and mirrors, and the chandeliers they had were the large gas globe type chandeliers, and the carpeting was very 1970s mustard yellow, avocado green, and brown. And it was delightfully vintage in there. I would have liked to spend more time in there, but smoking is allowed in the gambling halls, and I'm horribly allergic to smoke, cigarette smoke. So it was kind of like, hey, this is really neat, as I run through the gallery.
And that's where you really should have had a World War II mask.
Yeah, really. I do have one, but not with me. But
how many more days you got out there?
This is my last. I go home tomorrow morning. So
have you stopped in any of the casinos and dropped a quarter or two?
We did play penny slots today, and I'm happy to say that we doubled our money. We put $1 in, and we got $2.50 back. Ooh. And then with that, we were like, and we are done.
We are done.
We don't gamble, so that was the most we were going to do.
You guys got any questions for Kat on all that, or we're
going to... Yeah, why are you going back east when you're so close to the west?
Yeah, it's just time to go home.
I know,
Yeah.
Wish there had been a way I could get out there, but I have actually been working a little bit. So.
Yeah. No, working is good. And it's been fun. I've enjoyed being in Las Vegas. We're definitely coming back at some point.
Did you get to go out to the dam?
No, we did not have enough time.
All right. Oh,
you so that's been, one reason why we have come back.
Great photo of you with tick marks all over your face and arms. think about it.
No.
No.
Our
no.
Cat
did. I was going to say,
Doctor
didn't
Who
make it to the alien. Little
oh,
alien,
yeah.
Either.
That was Fresno, Mexico. So.
But yeah, we're really right. We're close to Flagstaff, Arizona, and Utah, and yeah. And I wanted to go speaking. I can speak. One of the things I've been trying to do out here is look to the sky for like UFOs and things. But light pollution here is pretty bad. So
yes.
Yeah. So. But it's been interesting visiting the Luxor. I got to see the bodies exhibit finally.
Do they still have the three-part show at the Luxor? It was this weird thing that Douglas Trumbull put together years ago where it was like they had uncovered ancient Egyptian artifacts and it's a 3D motion ride and such like that.
I don't remember seeing it.
No.
Right now so they have Titanic. Fun.
Oh, wow.
And then they have the bodies exhibit. And then they have their nightclubs.
For some reason, we're getting feedback. So I think what we'll do is we're going to go ahead and take our break. So, Jeff, you can take us out, and I will bring us back.
When it actually mute a little early there. You're listening to the Paranormal View with on para-x.com with host Henry Foister, Cat Cloco, Ceiling Cat, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould. And our returning guest has already left. So we'll be just chatting amongst ourselves for the next hour. So stay tuned for more of the Paranormal View after the break.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship.com. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Right. Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
Hi, I'm Rosalind Bown, and you are listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Right. Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
Yes!
I found it at last! Marla's sacred cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sunrising on the Para-X Radio Network.
X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Show Host.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, and I hope you're enjoying the show. And those listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. Just remember, if you do have questions tonight, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, co-host Cat, or myself, and we will get those questions answered for you. And if you're not in the chat room but you have a question, you can send it over to theparanormalview@gmail.com and just put it attention question. We will get those answered for you. Want to welcome back everybody, because tonight we have with us, excuse me, Cat Cloco.
Hello, everyone.
And we got Barbara Duncan.
Still here.
And we got Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
And I know we're going to be talking some stuff tonight about just paranormal news articles and different things like that this last hour. I do want to remind everybody that this coming Friday, the Ghost Brothers will be coming back on Friday night at 9 p.m. on Destination America. So very good paranormal show if you like them. They're very funny, and they do a great show.
So yeah, you like them.
Oh, I love them. Yeah.
We need them on the show.
Yes, I know. They were on a show last night, and I'll say that I'd really like to get them on our show. Yeah.
We should contact them and see.
Yeah, we're working on that. So, also, I know you were saying you got, I seen where you was putting some stuff over in Skype. I do want to let everybody know that I did post a video that I did, I don't know, it was sometime before I got into being into the paranormal, you might say. We were in Gettysburg, and I was just, it was early in the morning, been misty raining. It was before the tour buses and crowds started running around, so there wasn't anybody out yet. And I was just shooting some scenes from out. I was under the trees, but I was shooting out onto one of the battlefields, kind of. And all of a sudden, I mean, I didn't see anything until I went back and looked at the video. But there is a soldier standing out by a fence. And it's just standing there. I didn't notice it till I went back and looked at the video, but it's weird as all get out. There was no reenactment going on or anything. So they wasn't supposed to have been anything or anybody out there. So if you get a chance, you can go to my Facebook page and look it up, and you can watch it and see it.
Are you going to put it on our YouTube page?
I can put
should.
It there.
Yeah. You should do that.
I can't do that.
Paranormal View page, too. On
Facebook. Yeah, that, too. Because we had the, if you remember, last fall, I went to a ghost hunt, a Legend Trips event with Jeff Belanger, and we had an EMF REM pod go crazy nuts in a room, and I happened to film it, and nothing's around or anything. So it's like you should put your video on Facebook. On YouTube as well, so our listeners can see it.
I will do that, and I'll see if I can do that tomorrow, maybe.
Yes. Okay. So, for our listeners, I have a variety of news articles that I've pulled up. Have either of you guys pulled up any news articles?
No.
No. Okay. So I pulled up a variety, and I'm going to let everyone kind of choose what we're going to talk about. So the first article I have is, don't panic, radio alert about zombie outbreak. We're fake. Probably. Or, kindergarten teacher put on leave for using Ouija board in class. Or, a look at the mysterious hairy blob that washed up in the Philippines. Or, let's see.
Oh, are you giving us choices? Okay.
I'm giving you choices.
Oh, I definitely.
Witches across the globe to put spell bigly on Trump midnight on Friday. This is a little witches. Bit old. There was the haunted hotel has world's largest Ouija board. And finally, we have, and this is a great one. I love it. Proof of the afterlife? Big question mark. Ghost film pedaling on exercise bike in empty gym.
Aw. Yeah, let's start with that.
Okay, so this one comes from The Express in the UK, and I am putting up, if I can navigate, I'll put up the link in a few minutes. So there's actual video linked to in this article, and it says, a video that appears to show a poltergeist pedaling an exercise bike in an empty gym has been hailed as proof of ghosts. And it goes on to write, the short clip uploaded to YouTube shows the pedals turning on just one bike in a row of a number of them inside a health club in Mexico. And I will say, watching the video, you hear the women exclaiming in Spanish about how it's so freaky that this bike is moving, and that must be a ghost. The pedals appear to turn a fixed speed rather than slowing down as if someone had just gotten off. No one is sitting on the machine, and nothing is apparent that could have been rotating them. So some people suspect it could be a ghost. The video, Poltergeist Caught on Tape, Real, in Health Club, was updated on YouTube channel Strange Videos. The promotional blurb for the video says, the video shows that some people believed that was a poltergeist, an invisible person using an exercise machine in a health club in Mexico. And that's the end of the article.
Uh-huh.
This is one of those you really have to see, watch it.
So did you?
I did watch it. I'm sorry I did not share it with
oh,
you.
Oh, now you'll die in 7 days. Oh, wait, that's the wrong one.
So did it look real or? Memorex.
The first thing I took from this was, I'm sorry that whoever the ghost was haunting this place, I'm like, why would you haunt? Why would you go back and exercise? You're dead. I don't think it matters anymore. But
hey, ectoplasm just keeps building up, you know. You just got to work it off, apparently.
So I will say the pedals that are going, they're going at a very slow speed. not like inching, but it's like that I'm bicycling through or cycling through a park on a Sunday afternoon type of speed. They're on a steady speed for a while, and you just hear the women in the background shouting about it. And it could be rigged. I'm not completely convinced this is paranormal, but it's amusing. It's an amusing video.
You missed the best part of the article.
When I did.
At the end, somebody said it could have been hoaxed using a hamster.
I did miss that. Wow, where did I? Oh, I
hamster
missed that one.
In the wheel hub. Nice try.
I'm going to say, if it's a hamster in a wheel hub, that is fantastic engineering. Just rigging that all up for a hamster to do?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, a mouse or a rat could have gotten in there, too.
Yeah.
You never know, paranormal, maybe.
I'm going to say rat, because it'll be big enough to actually create the force, enough force to be able to move the pedals. I think. It depends on the size of the mouse, I guess, or the hamster. All the hamsters I've ever had have been very chunky. They just stop moving after about 2 seconds.
So which publication online did you get this? Not Report UK, I guess.
No, it's express.co.uk.
Oh, okay, I got it. Okay, that one. Then.
So also take that into account, the source.
Right.
Yeah.
They have a lot of those weird things like that over there.
Yeah, but these are fun stories. I don't think anyone's meant
so
to take
what,
them too
what
seriously.
So what about this teacher that got
with a Ouija board
or whatever for the Ouija
okay.
board?
So this one is an interesting situation, and I can kind of – she's not using it the way I thought she would be using it. So when I first read the title of the article, I thought, oh, hey, a teacher is trying to teach her kids, like, letters and vowels, and this is a creative way of doing it. That's not what she was doing. So kindergarten teacher put on leave for using Ouija board in class. This is the Huffington Post, but it has it comes from WISN 12. And a Milwaukee kindergarten teacher has been placed on leave after she reportedly used a Ouija board in class. Milwaukee Public Schools removed the unidentified – wow, words are hard, everyone unidentified teacher from her classroom Tuesday night after a parent complained about an incident that happened Friday at Zablocki Elementary. The teacher used a board as a prop while telling a scary story, according to WISN 12. The complaining mother, who wasn't identified, told the station her 5-year-old son has been having nightmares since then. He's scared now to go to bed at night, to be in the dark, anything alone, she said. The mother complained to the teacher, who explained how she used the Ouija board in an email. And quote, the kids have been asking for a scary story, and I got the board and moved the paperclip to answer some of their questions. They asked about scary characters in movies. I did not say they were spirits. It was all done in fun. I understand your concern. It was silly, and I'm sorry. I will take the board home, and this won't happen again. The teacher added that the Ouija board had been in the class since October. Milwaukee Public Schools did not immediately reply to a request for comment from Huffington Post. Depending on the outcome of an internal investigation, the teacher could come back to on the job. Either way, the complaining parent is satisfied with the outcome, the mother told WISN 12, saying that maybe the teacher will think twice about her actions in the future. In 2012, a different teacher in Bloomingdale, Florida, got in hot water under similar circumstances. Parents complained that she brought a Ouija board to a reading class as a prop. School district officials said at the time that the teacher had been cautioned to consider the type of reactions the parents might have about what she brings into the classroom. To be clear, the Ouija board supposedly allowed communication with dead spirits, but there's no evidence proving that. Rather, some investigators believe using a Ouija board might allow some people to contact with the unconscious mind, according to Smithsonian Magazine.
And you think that they're just afraid that something might be real?
Maybe. So it's interesting. And I'm going to be honest. I remember being a kindergartner, which I don't know how many people can say that, but kindergartners are afraid of everything.
That's too far back for me to remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I like how Kat put it up in the chat room. Think, the kids asked the scary characters in the movies to do an event with them. How could they know about those characters? It's definitely not the teacher introducing them to the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was that.
Well, that's like there. I collect artwork of pop culture T-shirts, and there's one that spoofs a lot of these kid activity books, mm-hmm. and it's literally. It has like a child laying down on a pentagram and there are candles and one kid is happily reading a book and it's like very 1950s artwork and the title is Let's Summon the Demons.
Yeah, it's kind of reminds me of those adult coloring books.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, you know, with all the paranormal shows and different things that they have on TV now, kids can get on there and watch all that stuff. So, I mean, don't you think that some of that stuff probably scares the crap out of them to start with?
Yeah.
Maybe again, they get immune to it to where they want to go actually do it or see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I remember being in kindergarten or first grade, and it was show and tell. And back in the 80s, there were the ugly ball toys where they were like footballs and basketballs and baseballs, and then they had these grotesque faces painted on them. And they're all the rage for young boys at the time. And some of the kids brought them to school, and I don't like horror movies. I still don't. Everyone knows this. It terrified me as a kid. And I think my mom complained because I didn't see any more of those toys brought to school anymore. And I feel bad because I ruined kind of the kids' fun. I would have gotten used to it, I'm sure. So, okay, chat room. What story would you like next? Haunted Hotel has world's largest Ouija board. Witches across globe to put spell on Trump. Or maybe did. I don't think that worked.
So, I really don't think we should put witches in a bad light because that sounds very dark that witches, real witches, true witches wouldn't do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I understand, though, that a woman named Dionne Fortune also did something very similar to that during World War II in order to stop Hitler from invading England.
Yes. But protecting England is different than actually trying to jinx somebody
so,
specific.
Yeah, what they actually said was, do not come, you cannot come, you're not going to win.
Yes.
So, okay. Is that what Bedknobs and Broomsticks is based off of?
Well, there are aspects of it, but not precisely, no. That was sort of the Disney's jokey thing that, you know, what Nazis did try and invade, and they telekinetically did some bad special effects for it and all.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies. I love the ghostly bagpiper on top of the hill.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, they forgot, you know, if you're going to take the face out of a helmet, don't have it so that there's no back of the helmet to see sky, because I'm like, why would they have nothing behind the helmet?
You know, I never noticed that.
It should just be an empty helmet.
I never noticed that.
Yeah, they green screened him out or something, and whoever was in there, and they just forgot, you know, to have the back of the helmet. They just could have put a practical prop helmet there, and yeah, it's empty. It's empty suits of armor.
I never noticed it. Anyway, so the other choices are a large, mysterious, hairy blob that washed up in the Philippines, and don't panic, the zombie apocalypse probably didn't happen.
Oh, that's a Rick Grimes.
Exactly what is supposed to be scary about a hotel with the largest Ouija board?
It didn't say it was scary. It was just a fun little oddity.
It's actually not a hotel, too. It's a private home, and they only do tours of the darn thing on Thursday nights.
Yeah, it's gigantic. Yeah. Is it on the roof?
On the roof. Yep.
It's roof of the house. Yep. Is it a flat roofed house?
Obviously.
Yeah.
otherwise, like, wow, the planchette always goes to yes and then falls onto the yard.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one's from unexplainedmysteries.com. It's haunted hotel has world's largest Ouija board. And the Grand Midway Hotel in Pennsylvania is home to what is officially the largest Ouija board on Earth. And it has a little Guinness Book of World Records seal next to the photo. Built more than a century ago, the Grand Midway Hotel has managed to attract the attention of numerous paranormal investigators, authors, and television producers over the last few years. The Grand Midway Hotel was an old coal mining hotel from the late 1880s, said filmmaker Blair Murphy, who currently lives in the building. I could recall countless ghost encounters or counter stories from folks who have stayed here overnight. It's actually been a fascinating place to live. Blair came up with the idea of building a giant Ouija board on the roof of the hotel after his own experience with a regular-sized board a couple of years ago. They flipped out. Things flipped out throughout the hotel, he said. It seemed to kick things up into an entire new level of paranormal activity. We were seeing floating people and hearing voices, and even hotel pets were flipping out and reacting to unseen forces. The giant version of the board, which he built along with the help of eight artists, measures a whopping 121.01 square meters and even features a giant planchette. The hotel roof was a massive blank canvas, just waiting for objects to present itself, he said. The Ouija board record roof was a perfect match for our place. And that's the end of this article.
So it's still in operation today?
I guess so. Doesn't really mention it.
Does it say that the Ouija board actually works? Or
I would like to see. The planchette is quite large, so I just put it up in into our chat room, and I just put it into Skype for you all to be able to look at it. Barbara, you're familiar with this.
44 by 29-foot Ouija board would be a very large planchette.
Yeah, the planchette looks like it's like the size of a wagon.
So now, in order, on a normal Ouija board, I guess somebody has to have their fingers on the thing, or two people.
You'd have to have both hands and push this thing.
That's what I'm saying. And if it does it on its own, it's liable to back up over top of you.
I'm looking to see how they operate the planchette.
Oh, the good news
casters
is,
like,
oh no, I see what they do. It's you have two men operating it, or two people, I should say. And Brian Cano is in this video. And so basically they have three people and two or three people operating it, and they have a sense of which vowel or a consonant to go to.
Yeah.
Oh, so they actually move it to that.
Yeah.
I thought according to a normal Ouija board, the spirit moves the planchette to start with.
Pretty much.
Has any one of you guys used a Ouija board?
I have about four or five of them in the closet.
Do they work?
Work for what?
Well, I don't know what you mean.
I mean, when you put it out there, does the spirit actually move that, or does people?
You realize that's you're thinking a Hollywood Ouija board, aren't you? You're thinking a Hollywood movie Ouija board.
I'm just wanting to know how the thing is supposed to be working. I mean, if you're moving it, you can make it say what you want to.
Or you're unconscious, of course.
Yeah.
So the background on this is a gentleman named Blair Murphy, who's an independent filmmaker in Los Angeles, bought the Grand Midway Hotel about 15 years ago. He wants to turn it into a haunted attraction. It's considered, the Grand Midway Hotel was considered one of the most haunted places in Western Pennsylvania.
Hmm. So what's said to haunt it? Did you happen to know?
No.
Okay.
Well, you said it was an old coal mining town or steel town. What was it? So they could have had all kinds of accidents. It could have been.
Okay. So answering some of your question, Henry, the Grand Midway Hotel still houses a few invite-only guests and is no longer in full operation, according to the forums attached to this particular article.
The tours were 7:30 to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and tickets are $10 a person. But I don't know how old this article is.
That's true.
Oh, October 20th, 2016. So it was relatively new.
Okay.
So, yeah. But only 7:30 to 11 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. And wintertime, probably not a good idea.
Probably not.
No.
Unless you want to be a ghost trying to reply back using it. Fly off that roof.
You'll get cold spots.
Yeah. That's what they call slip, slide, and way.
Yeah. So answering, when I used the Ouija board, and it was just last year, not even 6 months ago, we asked questions, and I didn't know the history of the location where I was at, and we got accurate responses back, according to people who did know the history. Oh. Sit there, and it moved on its own. Like, I just relaxed my arm and just it moved across the board.
I don't know why I was getting a lot of breakup there.
I was too. I actually dropped for a few seconds and it pulled me back in.
It could have been you that dropped for a second then, because I could hear something dropping. Cat is cut out once or twice. So, but anyway, we're trudging right along anyhow.
Really? Yep. You guys have been fine for me. A little feedback earlier, but no drops.
Well, I wouldn't drop, but it kind of like faded out and come back. So.
Yeah, I haven't had any of that. It's like a normal phone call.
Just a normal one, huh?
Yeah, normal.
Well, now, I know what they called in Kentucky back in the day was called raising the table, mm-hmm. which table tipping is what they call it. Also, my mom and them used to tell me about, and my grandma used to tell me about all the things that would happen down in Kentucky, people doing that stuff. And of course, that was when I was little, so that just scared the crap out of me. But my first investigation was at the Sorg Opera House, and Tim Shaw and Scotty Rorick and a whole bunch of them were there. And they had this table down in the basement of under the stage at the Sorg Opera House, and everybody was down there, and they started doing this. There was four of them would get around the table, and I filmed it, and you can see their hands are on top of the table, not touching it, and all of a sudden this thing starts moving up and down and going all over the place. They was up out of their chairs trying to keep up with the table. And I, of course, I was looking to make sure they wasn't touching it with their legs, feet, you know, some way with their hands. And it was all above board, you might say. But the table was actually moving. So I did get to see that for myself. I know that worked. I've never done anything with a Ouija board, and it just would amaze me that how you could make it do that. Now, there's different ways that you can do things. One is with a candle. If you just got a regular candle burning, you can ask a question and say if the answer is yes, make the flame grow tall, or if it's no, make it grow short, and that flame will either grow tall or grow short. I have seen that. So things like that do work, whether there's other mitigating factors that cause it, I don't know.
Yeah, Catter's asking in the chat room if table tipping is real.
Yes, I would have to say it is, because I actually witnessed it, but what really, I guess, when I was young was my grandma. a lot of traveling salesmen around the country way back when, going from town to town. They didn't have hotels like they do now, and if they was miles away from a town, they would stop in at farmhouses and see if the people, you know, had room to put them up for the night. And because they didn't have a lot of money, they would do things like this table tipping and different things. And they was, I guess, over at some house one night, and my grandma was there, and this man was doing this, making the table raise up and stuff. And he took my grandma and set my grandma up on top of the table. And he said, "Now, table, rise up and knock one time for every year old this girl is." And it rose up and knocked, come back down 15 times. And she was 15 years old. And he said, "Table, I want you to raise up and knock one time for every year it is until she gets married." It raised up and knocked one time. And by her 16th birthday, she was married. So, I mean, that's tales that they told when I was young. So when you're young and you hear them standing around at night, you know, telling these kind of tales, it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. So that's why I was always afraid of ghosts and the paranormal. So, but yeah, there's got to be something to all that stuff.
Wow. Cool. And the thing I take from that is, wow, your grandmother was 16 when she got married?
Yep.
It was Kentucky, right?
That was in Kentucky, yes.
There you go.
Anyway, so what would you like to talk about next? The mysterious hairy blob or zombie apocalypse?
Well, I'm not worried so much about them zombies, but what is that hairy blob?
Okay. So, and there's a video, I think I just put it in Skype, and there's a video along with it. So I'm putting it into our chat room right now. I like how all these happen to have videos today. So this is from Huffington Post Weird News again, and it says, "A look at the mysterious hairy blob that washed up in the Philippines. Some speculated it was a half polar bear, half whale. It wasn't. When a giant hairy, apparently dead thing turned up on the shores of Dinangat Islands in the Philippines, locals were understandably confused. The large creature measured roughly 20 feet long and weighed more than 4,000 pounds, according to National Geographic. It appeared to have shaggy white hair and was so otherworldly, some people speculated that it was half whale, half polar bear."
Because that works.
Yeah, because that's how life works.
That's how genetics work, exactly. Yeah.
So let me get this. That was a whale of a polar bear.
Just missing a Coke bottle.
Oh man. The new spokesperson for Coca-Cola. But at least one expert thinks she's figured it out. It's definitely a very decomposed sea creature in the later stages of decomposition, Lucy Babley's head of science and conservation for whale and dolphin protection group Orca told the BBC. A team of researchers from municipal office of Cagiano believe that remains are from a whale that had been dead for 2 weeks. Its quote-unquote hair is likely from decomposed muscle fibers, according to National Geographic. Babley seems to think that animal is a whale, too. The carcass is about 6 meters long, but that's really not the whole carcass. There's no tail, so it would have been bigger than that, Babley added. That would suggest that it was probably a whale. Locals believe the creature washed on shore as a result of a 6.7 magnitude earthquake that hit the Philippines on February 10th of this year. You can check out the hairy decaying animal below. And there's tons of photos attached to this.
So essential not only natural decomposition, but also predation, probably, you know, remove the tail and such like that.
Oh, yes. But it is bizarre when you look at it. It is, it looks like something out of Dr. Seuss, actually. But, yeah.
So did you post that in chat?
I did. Okay. I believe I also put it on into the Skype. Yep. It's the last link that I gave.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
So, Barbara, didn't you have any questions on that?
No, it makes sense.
Decomposing
will,
yeah, that could be, I guess.
I have to say, I didn't know whales decompose that way, but I never thought about how they would decompose in the first place.
Yeah, it's not like you get a lot of flies underwater.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, so it kind of reminds me of the Monotoc monster in a way, because it's just heavily scavenged and decomposing. Water is not a body's best friend after death. So, yeah.
Have you ever, don't quote me on this, but I think it's called a Portuguese man of war.
Okay. Yeah, the jellyfish.
Yeah, it's a jellyfish. Yeah. They got like balloons on the top of them, and they're on top of the water.
Yeah.
And they got strings hanging down from them, and they're the tentacles that'll shock the crap out of you.
They're one of the more deadly jellyfish, by the way.
Yeah,
they are.
Not as bad as like the box jellyfish, but pretty darn ew.
I seen one time when I was living in Daytona. I was a young kid. It had washed up on the shore, and I thought it was somebody lost a bunch of balloons or something until they told me don't go near it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Even after death, those things will sting you.
Yeah, that's what it was. I had no idea what it was. I just thought somebody lost a bunch of balloons tied together and it washed up on shore.
Okay, so I have one final article, and I want to read it because it comes from the great state of Indiana.
Oh, really?
my adoptive state. So it says, "Don't panic. Alerts about zombie outbreak were fake. Probably. Good people of Indiana, you can put your chainsaws and clubs down. Indiana residents can breathe easy after an emergency radio alert of a zombie attack was deemed to be the product of a hack. The broadcast was replayed frequently on a Winchester station around noon on Wednesday, and it warned of a flesh-eating attack as well as a related disease outbreak from dead bodies, authorities in Randolph County announced on Facebook. There is no local emergency, the sheriff's department assured in a statement. We have contacted the radio station and notified the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. Again, there is no emergency or disease outbreak in Randolph County. After hearing the repeated broadcasts on station WZZY 98.3, the country's Homeland Security and Emergency Management Team reached out to the state's DHS to see if it was a planned training exercise. Once determined it was not, the station as well as the sister stations were taken off air until they could regain full control, the sheriff's department said in an earlier release. Not everyone was buying it, however. Stay vigilant, folks. Odds are that zombies would go straight for the sheriff's department Facebook account first, one Facebook user cautioned the post comment section. One woman who said she heard the broadcast from her car said it followed two of the three emergency alert sounds. The subsequent verbal alert was described as a rushed and a little difficult to understand. Nice try, but you do not have your professional radio voice down good enough, she added. As for how the public can prepare for a real zombie outbreak, should ever one occur, the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention Office advise on their website that they even have a comic book titled Preparedness 101 Zombie Pandemic, because, I mean, you never know. The radio station did not immediately reply to a request for comment from the Huffington Post.
Hmm. Wow. Well, you know,
I'll have to read that later because I fell off of a lot of that call, and Skype seems to be implying Barbara fell off too. Although I'm seeing her listed.
She said not here.
No, I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, she meant she wasn't falling off.
And it was, okay. The sound was fine for me. Not.
Yeah. We never heard anything on the radio about anything like that here. I mean, they didn't announce anything like that.
They're not in Indiana.
I don't mean announce it that the Holocaust was coming with them, but that there was a problem with somebody hacking a radio station over there. So.
Wait, what did you just say about the Holocaust?
What?
You know,
the apocalypse.
Well, apocalypse, whatever.
Those are two very different things.
The zombie. Well, yeah, Holocaust if they came. That's all I could say. Because there'd be a whole bunch of them getting killed.
Yeah. So Randolph County, for those who don't know, is near Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is the, I'm going to say west central side of the state. Or east central side of the state.
Yeah, it's up near the border.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, there are movies, by the way, that use the word Holocaust as opposed to apocalypse, like Zombie Holocaust and such.
Yeah,
so.
That is Henry saying it threw me off, that's all.
Thanks. Well, we've made it down to only 5 minutes left, and it zipped right on by this last hour, so that's great. Want to let everybody know that next week, we have Preston Dennett with his new book, Inside UFOs, True Accounts. So he's got accounts of people who supposedly have actually been on UFOs.
Yes.
So that'll be very interesting. We've had Preston Dennett on before. He is a very well-known UFO enthusiast out on the West Coast. So ought to be interesting. And I believe he's also been on like some of these UFO shows talking about UFOs.
Most likely.
Yeah. Very, very good. So anything else you guys got before we start? We got a couple minutes here before we wrap it up. Matter of fact.
No, my connection is hanging on by a thread. My browser is just frozen up. So let's see how this goes.
Just really good science news as scientists got the go ahead to start resurrecting the dead with stem cells.
I saw that.
So there is a process that they actually do to see if they can bring back coma patients with sound. And they're going
to
try that.
Just put the alarm next to the bed and help them get to work.
Don't know what frequency they're using on that. But now they're doing stem cell research. They're going to be injecting stem cells into the brain and then some other chemicals into the spinal column to see if they can shock the people who are technically brain dead back to life.
Oh, wow.
And they have 20 patients that they're going to be working
with.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Well, it seems to me they should be able to use stem cells for a lot of other different things also to cure a lot of the diseases and problems that people have.
Stem cells are undifferentiated cells, which means they can pretty much morph into whatever they need to go to.
Right, and which means they should be able to grow pancreases in people with diabetes and all this stuff, and I don't know why they're not doing that stuff.
FDA.
Because
they're making...
And there's also this... group of people, that believe you can get stem cells from your own body, but normally they're using fetus material, and that is controversial.
Freaks out people,
right. So.
But now you can actually get it from the umbilical cord.
Oh wow! Yeah. I came across a science article that I posted on the Facebook Paranormal page. That Professor Brian Cox in England decided that the Large Hadron Collider is definitive proof that there's no such thing as ghosts. And I was reading this article. I'm like, what are you kidding? And it got down. First off, he's British, and you'd think he's one of the most haunted countries on the planet would even go there. But then at the very end, he said he literally thought you'd think that if there were ghosts, we'd have evidence about it by now. I'm like, hello, centuries of evidence and data have been collected. Where have you been, buddy?
Yeah.
Over there, Jeff. Your stuffy little Oxford.
Jeff.
Yeah.
We got to say good night.
Good night. Yeah, good night.
Kat?
Yes.
Where can we get everything at?
So everyone, you can go to theparanormalview.com for all of our host bios, our YouTube links, and all the links to all of our social media.
All right. Very good. Barbara, you got anything to add?
Nope, except good night, folks.
That's it. We'll see you next week at the same time. Till then. This is Henry Foister.
Jeffrey Gould.
Barbara Duncan.
And Kat Loco.
And we will see you then. So good night, everybody.